East Melbourne again, the frontages wide and deep, impossibly wide for this close to the city. 30-40 years of this and she could live in one of these. Well, live in the sense of staggering home to sleep in one between the endless days of work. No, my husband is in The Hague right now. Uphill, around the edges of the Mercy Hospital and the gardens, and briefly onto Victoria Parade. Any right turn would plunge them into the heart of Fitzroy. But the one the driver took was unfamiliar to her, between a florist on one corner and a small bar on the other. Then they were in the quiet streets, a place that felt full of secrets as much as history. The Napier Hotel flashed by, lit up, cosy. A drink. She hadn't brought wine. She could wing it and apologise. These weren't friends of such standing that she needed to care. But she admonished herself. It was how she got things done, admonishing herself. Is this good enough? No, it is not. Would you stop at the next pub? She asked the human rock. I need to grab a bottle. Another of his nods. As if he had willed it, a beer sign glowed through the rain, hung from a wrought iron rail above a doorway. It was at the end of a short run of shop awnings, one of which had a large fiberglass hamburger slowly revolving above it. Nick's American. The front of the pub was tall, but it looked nothing like the usual Victorian-era pubs of the inner north. Above the door, there was a small lunette window with timber frames and coloured lead-light panels, something written in gilt above the glass. The driver jolted the cab into park and she saw L-O-V-E tattooed on the backs of his fingers as they curled over the transmission. A faded manifesto, evidence of some long-ago life. The fingers were huge, and she sensed the compressed power in him. She stepped out into the rain. The beer sign was reflected in the puddles. A small booth served as a bottle shop, with doors to the left and right, presumably leading to bars. There were glass-fronted fridges behind the counter, a few racks of wine on the walls, a cigarette machine, a display of chips and nuts. The till was large and covered in brass scrollwork, with a window at the top where the number cards popped up. $1.43 stood there now, and Martha wondered what in this room could be so cheap, so oddly priced. A bare bulb hung from a power cord in the centre of the room. It was swaying, the breeze from her coming through the door, perhaps. Something about this room was strange, stranger than the oversized till. She had never been here. It was the sense of the familiar that disconcerted her. She was not good at this. Concentrating on some file in front of her, something complex, certainly, but not taking close note of the physical world. She could find herself on a tram sitting next to someone she knew well, who might sit there smiling at her absent-mindedness, and she would not notice them. But she had studied the taxi driver with a new form of intensity, and now here she was, ticking away in the bottle shop like a Geiger counter. She waited for someone to appear behind the counter, and the odd sensation persisted. Then another observation came to her. Under the cigarette smoke and spent beer, there was an intoxicating smell, something wonderful and mysterious. It maddened her. She felt she should know it well, but the word would not come. She breathed it in again, tasting it, and ran a hand along the edge of the counter to feel the wear of innumerable transactions. This room. Perhaps it was nothing more than having spent too much time in an office tower. Behind the counter, the ceiling was much higher and a spiral staircase wound its way up into the gloom, out beyond the fridges. She peered into the void. Still no one had appeared to serve her. She was busting to wee. How had she forgotten at home? She tapped the silver bell on the bar. The ding reached back into the building, and she could hear footsteps approaching, unhurried. A young man appeared, somewhere in his early 20s, wearing a black t-shirt. He was thin, not especially tall, his hair long and chaotic. His skin was pale, his eyes dark. "You right?" he mumbled. "I need a bottle of red, cheap red, like a Lambrusco or something." Okay. He nodded but didn't move. She sighed, remembering the other thing. "Do you have a bathroom here?" His face opened a little, like this was an easier request than the wine had been. "Yeah, through there and straight along, you'll see it." He gestured at the door to his right, to her left. On it was a map of the pubs of Fitzroy, sagging from its blue tack. She hesitated, looked into his eyes. "I won't be a sec." Through the door, out into a darkened room, much larger, but the low ceiling continued here. There was a long bar stretching parallel to her right, lamps finding tints among the bottles on the shelves. Music played faintly somewhere, but again, there were no customers. And even if there were, they could not have sat because the bar stools were crowded into the far corner of the room, some upright, some tumbled. They did not appear to have been placed there in any deliberate way. Maybe a drunk person had done it. It looked more like a football crush than a form of storage. When she came out of the bathroom, she found multiple doors leading off from the bar and couldn't remember which one she'd come through. She tried the first, but despite looking like a standard internal door, it opened onto the street and a cold blast of airy rain doused her before she slammed it. She tried another. Again, the darkness outside and the flying flecks of rain. The night smelled beautiful, damp and clean, and for a moment she thought about abandoning the bottle of wine and just walking out into it. A third door finally led back to the bottle shop. She looked at it with a frown, like it too had tried to mislead her. The boy was still standing there. His arms were propped against the bar, pale and sleek, and a bottle stood on the counter between his spread hands. Something about the way he occupied those clothes. Not how they draped on him, but how he moved within them. Were they borrowed clothes, perhaps? His face was turned away, looking over one shoulder to where an ancient woman was opening and loudly shutting cupboard doors, muttering under her breath. "It's okay, Nan," the boy was saying. "Don't worry about it. I can get it later." He sounded tired, as though this was a long-standing exchange between them. The woman kept searching. The cupboard slamming was done with a flick of her wrinkled hands, well-practiced, and the violence of it seemed to satisfy her. Then she stood to her full height, which was no height, really. She was dressed in a brightly patterned satin robe that was something like a kimono. Her white hair was piled high on her head, long strands swinging free of the combs she had jammed in here and there. She focused on Martha, her face pinching into a scowl. "We're closed," she said. "No, you're not," said Martha. The woman's eyes widened. "Oh, hello, you know better than I do." The voice was inflected without any indication of class or ethnicity, and laced with a distinct edge of threat. "I'm sorry," the boy interrupted. "Course we're open." From behind him came a noise and a loud sigh. The woman clattered off along the service side of the counter to the left of the bottle shop, out of sight. $7.50, all right?" She looked into his eyes. The price seemed optional. Shit, he was gorgeous. "Fine, thank you." Martha passed him $10. He jabbed a few keys on the till and it sprang open. Then he produced a long, narrow paper bag from under the bar, wrapped the bottle and pushed it towards her. "Fine," he echoed, eyes still locked on hers. "Have a good night." She pressed a smile, jammed the bottle into her handbag and went out into the night, giving the door a sharp look on the way through, as though it might be going to send her somewhere else. The taxi waited on the opposite curb, a flash of yellow in the monochrome street. She climbed into the back seat again and steeled herself for the night ahead.